Mrajuchtuden.
Mrajuchtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana, for joining me, I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Navan Benali. Navan is an Alaskan Native, Native American Two-Spirit, and the creator of Menabash Media. Navan also goes by their native names, Menabash, Chotzchini, Tuluruk, or Ashinaba. They are blessed, honored, and empowered to share they come from seven different tribes. They're Inupiaq, Koyakan Dene, Athabaskan, Navajo, Blackfeet, Mandan, Hidatsa, and Chickasaw. They are a full-time energy artist, professional marketer, and fourth-generation beadworker based on Dena'ina land. Their art is an extension, expression of their mind, body, soul, spirit, and emotions. Everything they create contains gentle healing vibes, Indigenous spiritual energy, and good medicine. You can inquire about their marketing consulting or art at Menabash Media on Instagram and Facebook. So guys, please welcome Navan Benali, Menabash. Hi Navan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ralph. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, good. The way that we got in touch was you reached out to me actually and said you wanted to talk about Indigenous sobriety. So thank you for reaching out.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having us. I bet so many people are grateful, including me, that you create content like this. I love hearing about sobriety and people's Indigenous wellness journeys and just knowing more about people and where they came from and how they got to where they were. Because I definitely feel it's so immaculate seeing people's growth and being able to talk about it openly.
Wow. Yeah. No. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do. You know, if we have people actually open and talking about their journeys, it can help people that are, you know, kind of just getting into it or even thinking about it, and maybe they're kind of scared or ashamed about it or something, and just to let them know that they're not alone, you know.
Yes, I really like breaking down that stigma and embracing who we are, because all of us have our own journeys and our own healing stories. So to be able to inspire one another and talk about it and embrace it is so impactful and almost different from like the culture that maybe you or I grew up with, where it was kind of like quiet and silence. We don't talk about that. Haklani, it's kind of like, I don't want to say suspicion, but what is it when it's a almost taboo, or it's like, yeah, you talk, yeah, about it's going to happen or something. We talk about it more, then that's going to happen more. But now it's a different age and era we kind of live in now, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. And I think social media has a big role in that, you know, and just people are able to connect more through social media, you know.
I agree. And we can actually like present ourselves the way that we view ourselves, which is so awesome. And I love social media. That was what my degree was in, was marketing. And I got my degree at Fort Lewis College because I am Native, with the $14,000 tuition waiver for being Alaska Native.
Wow.
And Native American.
So cool. Yeah.
So any Natives or any other people who are Alaska Native, Hispanic, check out Fort Lewis College and you can get a really good degree.
Wow.
For very cheap.
That's awesome. Speaking about that and you. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself so our listeners can get to know you?
Oh, yeah, of course. Hi, my name is Minabosh, which means Beaver Woman in Blackfeet. My Blackfeet Native name was given to me by my grandmother and my late father. My other Koyukon Diné name, my Athabascan Native name, is Hetzelchaney, given by my late great-grandfather, Johnson Moses. My Nupiat Native name is Tulagak, meaning raven, which was given to me by my Aunt Ida Ross, since my hair is black, resembling the dark feathers of the raven. And my Diné Navajo name, Athlinabab, means she wars in all directions. And lastly, my English name is Navan Love Benali, which was given to me by my mom. A little about me. I'm multiracial. I'm Alaska Native and Native American Two-Spirit. I am blessed, honored, and empowered to share that I come from 7 different tribes. I was born and raised on the Lower Tanana Diné lands in Fairbanks, Alaska. I am enrolled in the Alakaka tribe since their tribe is matrilineal. I am from the Swan clan. I credit a lot of my artistry and my Minabosh media to a lot of my matriarchs who are Nupiat, which is my late great-grandmother, Bertha Moses, and my late grandmother, Cora McGuire. I'm also Koyukon Diné, and credit my adaptability to my late great grandfather, Johnson Moses, who's from the Caribou clan, and I'm also Navajo from the Salt clan, and credit my resilience to my late father, Ashi Circling Eagle Benali, and I'm also Blackfeet, Mandan, Hidatsa, and Chickasaw.
Whoa.
Yeah. I got a real long intro.
That is so awesome. Wow. When you reached out to me, you said you wanted to talk about Indigenous sobriety. Are you sober?
Yes, I am sober. So I have actually 2 sober dates because I quit drinking. And then a couple years later, I quit smoking because that was my vice, my harm reduction, I like to say. I want to do a little more research. So I stopped drinking on February 20th, 2021 is my sober date for alcohol. And then my sober date for the smoking is January 29th.
Okay.
A couple years later. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. And with you being in recovery, Two-Spirit, an artist, what is it like in today's time?
It's so much more peaceful. It's very much like I connect to this innate community that I once didn't have. I was so disconnected and just so worried about, you know, instant gratification or whether just making myself numb in any type of way. It was more of running away from the skin I was in, but you can't really do that. So you just got to like alter your mind with a substance. And that really shifted my way of viewing myself and viewing others. So I feel like I have this actual deep connection and a huge spatial awareness with who I am and a sense of self and authenticity, which I never had before. It's almost like I'm getting to know myself of when I like first picked up the bottle or first like picked up smoking, which was like at the age of 19.
You think it's more difficult because you have to feel the emotions and you have to deal with everything sober?
I would say yes and no. It's kind of like your energy. It comes in waves. Like sometimes some days feel really good and some days I'm just like, wow, this is so tempting. I could just, you know, light up one joint and just be all good again. But I know I work so hard to get where I'm at that I'm not going to throw it away for like $7 joint and then create this habit, because the whole reason I quit was because I was spending $16 a day on smoking weed and probably saved about $6,000, $8,000 now since I stopped drinking. So it's just like all this money that I thought I didn't have before was just all going to my substances or like just abusing alcohol and weed and self-medicating in a way where I'm like, oh, I don't need help. But actually, like, no, I did. I still do.
Yeah. The reason I asked that was because, you know, some people think, oh, it's so much easier to just go out and get wasted and not think about all of the stuff, you know. That's what I used to think. That's what I did over and over and over again. But on the other side, when I got sober and I had that time of sobriety, it was the most amazing time. But it was almost the most difficult time because of what I went through, you know, trying to work on myself and trying to put into practice all the things that I learned about being sober and sobriety and in recovery. It was difficult, you know, and then after a time it got easier and easier. And if you know, I relapsed last year, and after like almost 4 years of sobriety, and at that time I was just like so ashamed and so broken. I was like, oh, I let everybody down, you know. And it was another hard thing to go through. But the things that I experienced sober, in a clear mind, everything that I've done sober, it was just so much better, so much more better. You know, I lived a better life. Everything was happening, even though I had to feel that tough time. Was that your case? In your case, was it kind of like that?
Yeah, it was very similar. It was almost like when I was smoking or drinking, it was like this Instagram filter where everything's okay. And it's like, you know, you have a drink and before you're all sober and you're like, I hate life. And then you have like a drink and you're like, I hate life. And it's like you have wearing sunglasses and you feel a little cooler because you can say that because you mean it. And there's, I don't know, just felt like real and raw when you're sober. It's almost like this genuine connection with everything that's happening in the universe. It's not just this filter, this mind-altering substance to get where you want to get. You get there genuinely. So it's not like you're taking two steps back as you're trying to take a step forward. That's how it felt with drinking and smoking.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It was like an Instagram filter. Remember those old Instagram filters when it first came out? Those terrible filters.
We thought they were so cool, too.
I thought they were so cool, yeah.
That's what smoking and drinking feels like, too, because I grew up with my whole family telling me, oh, it's not cool to smoke and drink, and then the generation after me didn't have that very much, like, oh, if you do this, if something's bad's going to happen. Like, it's different because I was raised in 96. So yeah. I always say, like, I'm the last millennial. I'm like a baby millennial. But I understand the Gen Z, too, because I grew up in that as well.
Yeah, yeah, totally. What were things like, you know, before you got sober?
Before I got sober, it was kind of, I always think of like myself drowning in self-hatred and just lost and very much trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong, and then figuring out what's wrong first before you figure out what's right. And it's just doing everything kind of backwards. And it's not in a good way where it's sustainable. It's more of like constantly adapting in this fight or flight state. So you don't know what's going on. It's this constant frenzy of just making sure you're okay, but you know you're not okay, so you're just going to put a band-aid over something that's just like gushing blood in a wound, but you're not doing anything to actually heal that wound.
Man, I know you're an artist because you the way you describe things, it's just so real for me.
Thanks.
and then when you decided to get sober, was it difficult for you?
Oh yeah, everyone around me was like drinking and smoking. Besides my husband, who very much like stopped drinking a year before I did. And I was like, no, I'm going to do a little more research and see what happens. And then my dad passed away, which was like so tragic to me because I found out over Facebook and no one told me. And I was just like, wow, I didn't talk to this guy for 4 years because it was kind of an on and off relationship. And he was in and out of my life, which is okay because I think he had his own things to deal with. And so I have the sense of understanding now that I'm sober that everyone's life isn't perfect. We all have this certain things we go through and circumstances, conditioning, and very much like trauma that we all carry with us. It's just whether you deal with it or not.
Mm. What is your life like now that you're sober?
Oh, my life is so peaceful. It's tranquil. It's almost like soothing. Like everything I went through that was so hard and difficult and immensely just shaped who I was kind of brought me to where I am. Like it's almost like creator, the universe heard all my prayers and manifestations to be right where I am right here, right now, which is a huge gift to have that clarity.
Yeah. When you're in that clarity, you feel everything, right?
Oh yeah. I always tell people I'm a Pisces, so I feel every emotion ever known to people. I don't ever turn it off. Like, you know how people sometimes think of memories and they put them in timelines. Oh, this happened in this year and this happened in this. My mind doesn't work like that. I'm so much of an artist. I file everything by emotions. So if I feel sad, I feel everything I've ever felt in my life that's sad, all the way up until I was like in my mom stomach or in her womb. Like, I have memories all the way up until then because I just meditate all the time, that which really helps me too with staying grounded and very much sober is a lot of meditation.
How do you deal with all of these feelings and emotions? How do you deal with them?
There's so much things you can do because, you know, you feel emotions on a like metaphysical, mental, spiritual, all these types of levels where it's the mind, body, spirit. So I try to heal all of them on different levels. So I'll go and walk on the beach barefoot. And I know it's winter right now, but that's what my massage therapist says, to ground yourself. So I'm like, okay, you're right. These shoes, these plastic shoes weren't made for us. We had actual like natural shoes or just, you know, with bare feet. And that's hardly common anymore. So I do that. I do a lot of exercising and working out for my mental. I do a lot of meditation and very much like journaling. Like sometimes if I have too much stuff to do, I write a list. I have a planner too that I write everything I did that day so I can go back and see what I did, because if I don't write it down, I don't remember. And then let's see, for the spiritual, I do a lot of like smudging and talking to my ancestors. I recently just got a spiritual mentor, which I was manifesting and had on my vision board for so long to find a spiritual mentor. And I finally found someone and I was like, yes, this creator has spoken. I can finally have guidance to what I'm doing, because art is so spiritual, and doing Alaska Native art and bead work is just so powerful. That's like almost like you have this set of responsibilities and you have to kind of feel like you should have an elder to tell you what to do, because that's just in our culture to have that stewardship or that guidance is so needed.
Yeah, man. You talk about emotions and you're dealing with emotions, and I want to talk about your art a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you believe that you can transfer your emotions or your energy or your state of mind into your art?
Oh, yeah. I actually listen to all your podcasts when I do my beadwork, so they have a healing energy about them. So when people buy my beadwork, I want them to feel the healing. And I believe my art is an extension and expression of my mind, body, emotion, soul, and spirit. So with my innate connection to community, the earth, our native land, and water, I feel as if I can give a piece of myself and my craftsmanship into my pieces, so then it carries on into other people and family. So it's like this trickle-down effect of healing. Because once you heal yourself, it's almost like you empower everyone around you to heal, and they absorb or feel that energy too.
Wow, that's amazing. That's so cool.
Oh, thank you.
You not only do beadwork, but you do like many forms of art. Can you tell us about your different art forms and where you get your ideas from?
Oh, yeah. So I'm like a full-time, I always say I'm a full-time energy artist, because I always put all my good energy into the art. Sometimes I like to think about things and sketch things down as I'm feeling certain darker emotions. I don't know, say, I think there's dark and light. There's a push and pull with emotions. Sometimes people see anger as dark, but I always see anger as a way of a reminder of what matters to you and what you care the most about. And that's why you're angry, is because your body and your mind are telling you that's important, so you should protect it or feel some type of way so you can act on it. So I'm always like, let me just act on my emotions and really communicate it through art, because I couldn't communicate it when I was drinking and smoking, and I couldn't communicate it. That's why I did do those vices and feel like I had to have mind-altering substances so I could express those emotions. But through art, it's very much like painting. I do a lot of embroidery too, beadwork, drawing, digital art as well. Oh, I also cool. do a lot of marketing too, like marketing for indigenous small businesses, like consulting.
Wow, so cool.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Why is Native art so expensive?
Native art is so expensive for so many reasons. And I think it has to do with, I learned this from my elder and my spiritual mentor. And she said, if you think about what sustainability is and ask yourself, what is sustainable? What is that? What do you think of when you think of sustainability, Alaska Native sustainability? And they said art. And I had to think about it. And art was here before we even got here. Art was here before the colonizers came, and art will still be here. until after we leave, because it's so universal in who we are as Alaska Native people. That's why whenever anyone that's in my family that says they want to be an artist, I'm like, please, please do this. I will do anything to help you. It doesn't matter if it's like, call me up at any time or text me or contact me. It's one of the most sustainable things that we have as Alaska Native people that will be here forever. Sure, we have the land and the water, but that's always changing and dynamic as the earth evolves and we evolve, but art will always stay with us. And so I always think it's so sacred, and we have family patterns like Kupok trim, or we have parka trim, or we have these certain symbols and certain little like art forms that are characteristic to who we are as tribe and families, that are so innately who we are that when we create it, it's almost like our ancestors move our hands for us because we've done this before and we can do it again.
You talk about, you know, families have their own designs and stuff like that. Now, this doesn't happen very often, but I've seen, you know, some artists get like so angry with other artists saying, you know, they stole their designs, or the way they make their art, you know, they stole it. And you basically do how-to videos, you know. What are your thoughts on, you know, people stealing art what are your thoughts about that whole thing?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think it's controversial, and it depends on the artist itself, because I think us artists, we're sensitive. We're really sensitive and fragile about what we create. It's almost like bringing something out of nothing, like we're birthing these new ideas. And some of people may value those as their actual babies or like their intellectual property, which is totally fair. I just believe that carrying on, I want to learn as so much as I can and soak up so much energy and artistic knowledge so then I can pass it on to other people, because sure, people may be flattered by my art and they want to copy it, and that's okay. Personally, I think that's fine. That's why I don't have any copyright on my patterns personally, but if they're other people's patterns that I'm using, I have to ask permission and say, is it okay to have this pattern? Is it okay if I modify this? Because some people may come after you for that, which I think is totally okay, because that's maybe it's something sacred in their family that we don't know anything about and we didn't even ask permission. Even to this day, I message artists and I'm saying, oh, I really like this design, and is it okay if I have your permission to use it? I don't hear anything. They left me on read, and that's fine. I'm like, okay, I got my answer, and it's clearly nothing, which is totally fine, because that maybe took years and years of practice and I don't know. And that's why I like to ask usually, because it's such a vital part of Alaska Native culture and Native American culture that I may not know about. Yeah. So
don't feel bad about being left on read. You don't know how many people I ask to be on my show and I never get any responses back. But, you know, hey, that's okay. There's tons of people out there, you know.
Oh, yeah. I think that's fine, too, being on red. I'm like, okay, that's okay. You know, I don't know what's going on in their life. I have to take that. What is it? One of the four agreements where it's don't take anything personal. Meanwhile, when I was drinking and smoking, it was like everything was personal. Everything was an ego trip.
Definitely. Yep. Now, writers have writer's block. I saw you say creative blocks. How or what do you do when you have like a creative block?
I just don't think about it. Sure, that's easy to say now in hindsight, but in the moment I just let it all go. I stop going on the internet. I just stop all social media interactions. I just take a break. And eventually you'll start doing art again. You just got to trust the innate universe that you need a break and it's okay to relax. Because growing up, I didn't have very much people who were telling me, it's okay to relax, you can take a break. It was more like, work through it, keep working harder, it'll come to you. And like that hustle culture of like productivity was not sustainable.
Don't you feel kind of a little bit like, man, you have that feeling though, you know? Like, you got to do something.
Yeah, it's almost like a monkey on your back. My spiritual teacher always says there's like chattering monkeys, and those are the chattering monkeys you just got to quiet, and you can quiet it with smudging or with going on a walk or just sitting there and just watching, like, you know, the snow melt or meditating or being connecting to your breath too. So I always say that once you can control your breathing, you can control your emotions. And once you can control your emotions, you can control your thoughts. So it all comes back down to breathing and those breathing techniques. And that's what I always kind of go back to if I'm just like can't even think for a minute. I'm like, oh, wait, I just need to breathe.
Yeah. I after my relapse, I went to outpatient treatment again. And they had breathing exercises in there. And you are absolutely right. You feel like so much better even though I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is kind of funny, you know, like all these different types of breathings and they sound funny. And then some of them you put in like sounds and, you know, noises like stuff like that, you know, and at the time you're like, oh, what is this stuff? You know, but you actually do feel a lot better, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like in our innate Alaska Native and Native American cultures to be quiet and not heard. So like breathing and hearing ourselves breathe is like, you know, hearing yourself recorded or talking and you're like, do I really sound like that? Is that what my breath sound like? But once after a while you get used to it, you know, it's kind of like a practice. Like the more you record yourself talking, the easier it is get to listen to you or watch yourself on video. It's just very much a practice and everyone's not going to be good at first. But after a while, you'll get accustomed to it. I recommend using those noise-canceling headphones so you don't have to hear yourself if you're like, no, I can't hear that.
Awesome. And is there anything else you would like to say before we end this?
I would just say be gentle with yourself. It's okay to feel what you feel and that your emotions are there for a reason. They're telling you things that you may not know, but they're here to tell you as reminders of who you are and what you've been through. So I wouldn't say listen to them, but also have a deep connection with who you are and why you feel those emotions, because then you'll gain this emotional intelligence and be able to move forward in life on how you feel. Because I think a lot of people move logically and cerebrally, which is great, but also there's this emotional aspect that makes us human and be able to connect with one another. So our emotions are very important.
Awesome. Yvonne, I want to thank you so, so much for reaching out. This was so fun to do today. And you shared so much that I know somebody out there will gain something, some hope, some laughs maybe, you know, and everything. So thank you so, so much, Koyana.
Aw, thank you for all that you do. And I appreciate you being authentically you. I see all your strength and I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project on 91.3 FM, KMHA, the voice of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nations, serving the Fort Berthold Reservation and the surrounding communities in central North Dakota. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.